Hey, all you Tolkien heads, I'm David Gaddy.
And I'm Jeremiah Orr from the Theonauts Podcast. And you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast with your hosts, Michael, Micah, and Brendan.
Right here on the GCT Network, your Great Commission transmission.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from the house of Tom Bombadil in the Shire, Middle-earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 10. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, what evil lurks in the fog on the Barrow Downs? The hobbits know? Well, let's meet the Barrowites. We invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire each week here on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Back second week in a row after our month off break. Guys, did we have a good discussion last week on who is Tom Bombadil?
I think so.
Yeah, Micah, did you enjoy that?
I did.
Was there anything that you guys felt was left out? Anything that you wanted to maybe addendum, afterthoughts? Anything like that?
No.
You know, Brandon, I saw you tweet out or something that was your favorite episode so far. What are you doing? What are you doing with that microphone?
I can't get an angle where I can see you.
I see you fine.
You can see me, but if I do this...
No, that's fine.
This is fine?
Yeah, we shouldn't be producing on the fly here. You should have had this already 2 minutes ago.
1 second.
Now you lost the... You lost the vibe.
First of all, my question is, Tom Bombadil's house in the Shire?
No.
Then why'd you say it was?
Did I?
Yes.
Oh, no. I did. Broadcasting from the house of Tom Bombadil in the Old Forest.
I didn't even catch that.
Middle-earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, episode number 10. There.
The flack we would have gotten for that.
I'm so thankful that you got...
Man.
I can't tell you how many times when I listen back to parts, even just small parts as I'm editing, preparing the podcast, and say, I didn't say that, did I? I did say that. Oh, here's something that I wanted to make clear. Last week, I left the impression that Micah was celebrating a birthday for himself. The previous week. That's not true, because Micah's 17.
I'm 17, not 16.
Yes.
And it was a friend of mine.
Yep, and that's why, that's cleared up. Now, yep. Why did you say that last episode was your favorite episode so far, Brendan?
Because I like the delving into the pawpaw patch.
Yeah.
I like doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, going off and seeing what's over that little ridge over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have a tiny bit of that this episode.
I mean, that's really part of the M.O., of this show.
Sure.
And that's why we're thankful when people leave feedback and help us give more, well, when they want to be pedantic. We like those who are pedantic.
Yes.
We got no pedantancy.
Yes, we have no pedantancy.
Not this week. Anyway, what are we talking about?
Today we're talking about Chapter 8, Fog on the Barrow Downs.
All right, so we are still in the house of Tom Bombadil. We've gone to bed, and that night they heard no noises, but either in his dreams or out of them, he could not tell which, Frodo heard a sweet singing running in his mind, a song that seemed to come like a pale light behind a gray rain curtain and growing stronger to turn the veil all to glass and silver until at last it was rolled back. And a far green country, there's a foreword, a far green country opened before him under a swift sunrise. Now, Brendan, you are familiar with that term, a far green country, from the films.
I am?
Yes, you are.
I didn't notice.
Pippin and Gandalf are having a conversation as Minas Tirith is under attack. And
okay, remind me, what is Minas Tirith?
That's the white city, where Boromir is from.
Yes, okay, gotcha.
So this far green country. But I love how this chapter just starts right off.
Well, yeah, maybe they didn't hear any sounds in the morning because game sounds aren't...
Sounds. Hey, we'll learn how to do this show.
Maybe someday.
Eventually. We're only on episode 10, come on. Yeah. I've been saying give us 10 episodes, so next episode had better be
I don't think it's gonna
on
happen.
Point.
Hey, we're feeling our way through this process, bud.
Yes.
So...
either in his dreams or out of them. There, we've had like three chapters or three episodes at least. Three chapters, because even back in Crick Hollow, where Fatty Bulger is standing by at the Hobbit Hotline,
that's right.
Should people want to call?
That's right.
Dreams were taking place there,
mm-hmm.
and visions,
mm-hmm.
and we start this chapter the same way. Okay, Brendan. So go ahead and you start driving the bus. You lead us through this.
Okay. Well. It gets to where Frodo realizes, hey, we haven't said bye to Goldberry.
In fact, we haven't seen her since the
night before.
Previous night.
Yeah, since the evening where they had the big feast.
Yeah.
One of the many big feasts at the Tom Bombadil house. Tom sets them out on their way. Let's see if I can get to it. They rode off along a path that wound away from behind the house and went slanting up towards the north end of the hill brow under which it sheltered. They had just dismounted to lead their ponies up to the last steep slope when suddenly Frodo stopped. Goldberry, he cried. My fair lady, clad all in silver green, we have never said farewell to her, nor seen her since the evening. He was so distressed that he turned back, but at that moment a clear call came rippling down. There on the hill brow, she stood beckoning to them. Her hair was flying loose, as it caught the sun, it shone and shimmered. A light like the glint of water on dewy grass flashed from under her feet as she danced. I love what Tolkien, the descriptions he gives Goldberry. But before we go on to that, we have to address something, Michael.
What's that?
This is Frodo speaking in a rhythmic meter.
My fair lady, clad all in silver green, we have never said farewell to her, nor seen her since the evening. Why? Why is he speaking in that? What'd you call it?
Just a rhythmic meter. Yeah. I don't know what necessarily the meter or the rhythm is, but I just know it's there.
It sounds
like he's been spending a little too much time with Tom Bombadil.
Being refreshed and discipled.
Yeah, and being influenced, and you know, Tom's leading him down the wrong path again. That wayward soul. Didn't Kansas sing a song about him? Nope.
No, they did
That's
not.
A different show.
They
That's
certainly
a show.
Did not.
But anyway, but yeah, you've got this. We see the influence that Tom has had on Frodo. And we see it later on in the chapter. You know what I mean?
Now we know that all along Frodo has been. First, he was influenced by Bilbo, and Bilbo fancied himself a wordsmith, a song weaver,
yes,
a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that again all the way along, coming out of Frodo. But now he is sounding like Tom in that rhythm meter. It's nice when you see Frodo along the way up to this point stop and wax poetic, right?
Yes.
Even if it's that that elegiac lament.
Which
is what this is.
Oh yeah.
Is it not? There we go, Thomas. We've spotted our first instance since you were encouraging us to do so. This is an elegiac lament of sorts.
Well, in a way, yes, but I would counter that with,
well, he's heading.
Goldberry's not gone yet.
Right. He's heading the loss off at the pass.
Yes. Okay, yes.
So
yes,
it would be a prophetic elegiac lament,
yes.
Almost,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Hey, we see what's happening here. I can't leave this place without saying goodbye to my fair lady clad all in silver green. We have never said farewell to her nor seen her since the evening. And she is a fantastic character, isn't she? Just the way that you pointed out how the descriptions, the wording that Tolkien uses in order to describe her, and he does that often with all of the women in Middle-earth.
Mm-hmm.
Micah, do you think I'm right about that? His descriptions of, well, when we get to Galadriel, Eowyn. You know, there's been much ado about nothing, I must say. About
ado about nothing? No, sorry.
There is a school of thought or a group of people that believe that Tolkien's story is, well, it's sexist. It doesn't give enough screen time, so to speak, print time to women. And therefore, he must not think very highly of women. Whereas the whole story of Beren and Lúthien, Tolkien described his wife as Lúthien, as being the inspiration for these great women that are in the legendarium.
Or even if you look at Eowyn, I mean, because, yeah, you know, she went above, pardon that, there's people running back and forth. The 10th anniversary in Lotra is going on, so people are coming in and out of
Tumbaga. Oh, and it's fun.
Yeah. But anyway, Eowyn went on to do what a man could not.
Right. Know, I am no man.
Even better.
Yes. You
know? So I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I don't either. Not at all. But let's focus on the light that he shines on women. And how do we see that light? By the way that he describes them.
Yeah.
In all their beauty and all their strength and their otherness, even.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like he respects what makes them different. What makes men and women different?
Yes.
Just more on Goldberry real quick. The language that he uses of the rain and of moving water, because like the passage that you read, a song that seemed to come like a pale light behind a gray rain curtain. I think that's Goldberry's influence. She's not necessarily present in that passage, but I think that's some of her influence.
Yes, because she also is one of those kids. She's just like Tom Bombadil. We don't know who she is or mm-hmm. what she is. Is well, she also
she
Maya?
Is.
Yes. She's River Daughter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then later on, let's see. But at that moment, a clear call came rippling down. You know, what else do you use rippling for but moving water?
Yes.
You know, like it's almost like it has that ripple sound.
And it's beautiful.
Rippling. Yeah. And even a light like the glint of water on dewy grass flashed from under her feet as she danced. trying to imagine that was very taxing on me. It is right now.
So. Speaking of elegiac lament, I must once again pause and be for some lamentations.
Oh, no.
For Peter Jackson and company leaving out all of the Old Forest and these rich, amazing characters of Tom Bombadil and Goldberry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They hastened up the last slope and stood breathless beside her. They bowed, but with a wave of her arm, she bade them to look around. And they looked out from the hilltop over the land, hilltop over lands under the morning. It was snow. It was snow. It was now as clear and far seen as it had been veiled and misty when they had stood upon the knoll in the forest, which could now be seen rising pale and green out of the dark trees in the west.
Yeah, we have to continue here because I love what Tolkien does here with the four directions of the compass, the four points of the compass.
Yeah.
He touches on each one of them. Let's hit them. In that direction, west, the land rose in wooded ridges, green-yellow russet under the sun, beyond which lay hidden the valley of the Brandywine. So now we're looking back west, the Brandywine and the Shire beyond it, right on its borders. To the south, over the line of the Withywindle, there was a distant glint, like pale glass, where the Brandywine River made a great loop in the lowlands and flowed away out of the knowledge of the hobbits. Out of the knowledge of the hobbits. Mm-hmm. I love northward, beyond the dwindling downs, the land ran away in flats and swellings of gray and green and pale earthy colors until it faded into the featureless and shadowy distance. Eastward, the Barrow Downs rose, ridge behind ridge, into the morning and vanished out of eyesight into a guess. Wow. It was no more than a guess of blue and a remote white glimmer blending with the hem of the sky, but it spoke to them out of memory and old tales of the high and distant mountains. Great imagery.
Yeah. Great use of color. And I wonder if there's more to Tolkien's use of color.
Oh, I'm sure there is. He was a great lover of nature, and he was pretty darn good at reading the land, so to speak. In many of his letters, especially to his son Christopher, if I'm remembering correctly, the letters to Christopher, he talks much about what's blooming and what's going on with the trees outside and the plants. And you'll say, oh, and you know, he talked like this in his letters to his son. But not only the color, but knowledge together. You know, there's this couplet. And so the mystery associated with this and the colors and the mists and these things, I think that's a great coupling, putting things together. Tells a great story.
Yeah, yeah. And just to add to it, I wonder why now, because I've been chewing on Tom Bombadil since we left.
You will for the rest of your life.
I know. And I wonder, why is his jacket blue?
And his boots are yellow.
Why are his boots yellow? I mean, is that a rabbit trail I need to follow, or?
I always found it was just shows that, I mean, he just doesn't care, you know?
Well, that's true, yeah. He's like, what is this fashion sense?
Or maybe there's a bit of hobbitishness in him, because they love bright colors and...
But no boots.
Maybe so.
Yeah, no boots.
Or actually...
Instead of boots, waistcoats. Mm-hmm.
There's not... Hobbitishness in him, but there's
Tom Bombadil,
because he was first.
Oh, yes.
He was first.
He watched the little people come.
Mm-hmm.
He saw the Falahide brothers, Marcho and Blanco, leading hobbits from Bree over the Stone Bows Bridge, Bridge of Stone Bows.
Yeah.
Hey! Maybe he left his mark on them. Great thought.
Maybe so. They took a deep draught of the air and felt that a skip and a few stout strides would bear them wherever they wished.
Okay, they are very positive right now.
Yes, they are. Yes. It seemed faint-hearted to go jogging aside over the crumpled skirts of the downs toward the road when they should be leaping as lusty as Tom over the stepping stones of the hills straight towards the mountains.
We would say these hobbits have a skip in their step right now. Huh. There's Goldberry. So instantly, Frodo's relieved of that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Wait! You know, I may be lamenting the loss of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying farewell to Goldberry. Well, there she is, and everybody's happy. Air's fresh, great, wonderful colors. Man, we're like Tom Bombadil here, bringing our step.
Well, let me make sure I read this right then. It seemed faint-hearted to go jogging aside over the crumpled skirts of the downs towards the road when they should be leaping as lusty as Tom over the stepping stones of the hills and straight towards the mountains. So isn't their mission to get back on the road?
Yes.
Okay.
But so
with this...
Look around, and you man!
And the relationship...
Yes!
That they've developed with Tom over the past few days or whatever.
However long
it was.
They don't know.
We don't know. Tolkien probably doesn't even know. Don't even care.
Yep.
Because it doesn't help the story get along. But they would just rather follow Tom and be with Tom.
Yes.
And to me, that makes Tom a much more endearing character. Yep. As if he wasn't already. So, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Goldberry spoke to them and recalled their eyes and thoughts. "Speed now, fair guests," she said, "and hold to your purpose."
Ah.
North with the wind in the left eye.
Huh.
Yeah. What does that even mean?
You want the wind coming from the west, then the wind comes from the west. That way you know you're heading north if the wind's
is hitting your left eye.
Oh, okay. She's saying, you can't be like Tom right now. You got to hold to your purpose.
Hey, there you go.
Yep.
north with the wind in the left eye and a blessing on your footsteps. Make haste while the sun shines. And to Frodo, she said, farewell, elf friend. It was a merry meeting.
Oh, she gave him a gift, yeah. A blessing.
Mm-hmm. So good. But Frodo found no words to answer. He bowed low and mounted his pony, and followed by his friends, jogged slowly down the gentle slope behind the hill. Tom Bombadil's house and the valley and the forest were lost to view. The air grew warmer between the green walls of hillside and hillside, and the scent of turf rose strong and sweet as they breathed. Turning back, they reached the bottom of the green hollow. They saw Goldberry.
I love this.
Yes. Now small and slender, like a sunlit flower against the sky. She was standing still, watching them, and her hands were stretched out toward them.
I love that! Her hands were stretched out toward them.
Mm-hmm. As they looked, she gave a clear call, and lifting up her hand, she turned and vanished behind the hill. What a send-off.
Yes.
What a send-off.
Yes. Poetic.
Yep. And where the mood was once positive, now it starts getting darker.
Yeah.
And I like how Tolkien eases us into it. Just to skip down a little bit of that paragraph, when they caught a glimpse of the country westward, the distant forest seemed to be smoking, as if the fallen rain was steaming up again from leaf and root and mold. A shadow now lay around the edge of sight, a dark haze above which the upper sky was like a blue cap, hot and heavy.
Right, and they had said that there was no tree nor any visible water. It was a country of grass and short springy turf, silent except for the whisper of the air over the edges of the land and the high, lonely cries of strange birds.
It sounds very desolate. Especially, and I highlighted that description, a shadow now lay around the edge of sight, a dark haze above which the upper sky was like a blue cap, hot and heavy.
Yeah. Foreboding or oppressive.
Well, if anything, he's just describing what happens on a hot summer day, like the sun is like straight up in the sky.
Where the heat is heavy.
Yeah, the blue is like, it's almost so hot that the blue is starting to feel like, like you said, oppressive. But then you look toward the horizon and it just gets darker for some reason. You're like, man, what is going on? And seeing him put that in the text, that really spoke to me on how hot it was.
Yes.
And how foreboding, how oppressive this ecosystem was. It's not the lush, tamed garden of Tom Bombadil anymore. It really sets the tone for what's about to come up.
Well,
you know what I mean.
About midday, they came to a hill whose top was wide and flattened like a shallow saucer with a green mounded rim. Inside, there was no air stirring, and the sky seemed near their heads. They rode across and looked northwards. Oh, but now we get some relief, because then their hearts rose, for it seemed plain that they had come further already than they had expected. Certainly the distances now had all become hazy and deceptive, but there could be no doubt that the downs were coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't sound like they're coming to an end.
Yeah, I don't know why they're thinking that.
Well, even where Micah is right now, have you entered the North Downs?
I have.
Describe it, Micah.
Well, it's pretty much like it's described in the book, where it's green mounds with very little trees and these white, sharp, I don't know, did you get to that part yet where it starts describing the...
Should we move on
here? Yeah, here, I got it right here. And I was intrigued by this description, too. I thought it was very visually compelling. But even as he spoke, he turned and glanced eastwards, and he saw that on the side of the hills were... That on that side of the hills were higher and looked down upon them, and all those hills were crowned with green mounds, and on some were standing stones pointed upward like jagged teeth out of green gums.
Yep, and it's got just that.
That's like disgusting. and it's just, like, oh man,
it's a creepy area in Lotro. It's a creepy area in Middle Earth,
yeah,
and in the Legendarium as a whole.
Mm-hmm. That view was somehow disquieting, so they turned from the sight and went down into the hollow circle. In the midst of it, there stood a single stone, standing tall under the sun above, and at this hour casting no shadow. It was shapeless and yet
significant,
like a landmark or a guarding finger, or more like a warning. But they were now hungry, and the sun was still and still at the fearless noon. Fearless what?
So hey, everything's fine at noon. I mean, that's the sun's at its highest point. Everything, the light is shining on everything. There is nothing to be hidden at high noon.
I'll accept your answer.
There's no shadow, even in this guarding finger or warning landmark.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they set their backs against the east side of the stone. It was cool as if the sun had no power to warm it. That's creepy to think of.
Fringy!
Yeah. No power to warm it. But at the same time, this seemed pleasant. There they took food and drink and made as good a noon meal as under the open sky as anyone could wish. For the food came from... down under hill. Tom had provided them with plenty of the comfort of the day. Their ponies, unburdened, strayed upon the grass.
Yeah.
See, even at this point, they're still loving Tom and the relationship.
Do you see what Tolkien's doing here?
Foreshadowing.
Vacillating between, hey, the hobbits are thinking, ah, no problem, to where we actually see what's going on. Problem.
Yeah. It's like breathing. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale because you're scared. Exhale because you're relieved.
Yeah. Ooh. Momentarily.
Momentarily. Until I get the breath caught up again, but to tell you what.
Wow.
Riding over hills and eating their fill, the warm sun and the scent of turf, lying a little too long, stretching out their legs and looking at the sky above their noses, these things are perhaps enough to explain...
perhaps.
What happened? Man, this is where it gets good. However that may be, they woke suddenly and uncomfortably from a sleep they had never meant to take. Going along with your dream discussion and this drowsiness that's now
heavy
overcoming
them.
Yes. Yeah. The standing stone was cold, and it cast a long, pale shadow that stretched eastward over them. That was weird.
That was good timing.
That was good.
Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes. The sun, a pale watery yellow, was gleaming through the mist just above the west wall of the hollow in which they lay. North, south, and east, beyond the wall of the fog, was thick, cold, and white. The air was silent, heavy, and chill. Their ponies were standing crowded together with their heads down. The hobbits sprang to their feet in alarm and ran to the western rim. They found that they were upon an island in the fog.
I have a feeling that this turn, as we have been vacillating between everything's wonderful and no, it really isn't, now we're no, it really isn't, I have a feeling it's not going to turn back for a while.
Even as they looked down in dismay toward the setting sun, it sank before their eyes into a white sea, and a cold gray shadow sprang up from the east behind. The fog rolled up to the walls and rose above them, and as it mounted, it bent over their heads until it became a roof. They were shut in a hall of mist, whose central pillar was the standing stone. That blows my mind with the imagery. Because I could just see it happening, and Tolkien makes the imagination easy.
He's using an eyeline. You are being forced, if this was a visual, to follow this line.
Yeah.
Right to that standing stone.
Oh, man. Well, okay.
A warning.
Okay. What is the stone?
Well...
is it a landmark that commemorates something?
I may be wrong, but... if I've found the right location in Lotro, it's called the Dead Spire.
Ooh.
And I believe it is a tomb that has three kings in it. That may be completely incorrect, but I believe in Lotro that's what it is.
Are you fact-checking that, Michael?
Oh, goodness, I don't know how to fact-check that. I'm looking at stuff here for, you know, the Barrow Downs and things that we want. Well, let's get just a little bit further in.
A little bit further, okay. I highlighted this part. Get ready for an exhale. Here we go.
Okay.
They felt as if a trap was closing about them, but they did not quite lose heart.
Oh,
there it is. Oh, I can breathe out again.
Hey, we'll make it through this.
That's right. They still remembered the hopeful view which they had, had. Stop. Go back. Strike that. Reverse it.
Okay, Willie.
They still remembered the helpful view they had had of the line of the road ahead, and they still knew in which direction it lay. In any case, they now had so great a dislike for that hollow place about the stone that no thought of remaining there was in their minds. They packed up as quickly as their chilled fingers would work. So you're going from this overbearing heat and desolation to now it's a cold desolate
two extremes
feeling. It even gets lonely here in just a little bit, but they still got that hopeful view. Soon they were leading their ponies in single file over the rim and down the long northward slope of the hill down into a foggy sea. And as they went down, the mist became colder and damper, and their hair hung lank and dripping on their foreheads.
In fact, you skip down, it says they were steering as well as they could guess for the gate-like opening at the far northward end of the long valley, which they had seen in the morning. They're just trying to get out of there and using their memory, because they are enclosed now in this fog. They're wet. Their hair is hanging down in their eyes. Hey, let's just keep going in this direction. I know it. We just need to get this way. Everything will be fine. In fact, they say that, eventually we're going to hit the road. You know, their going was very slow. To prevent their getting separated and wandering in different directions, they went in file with Frodo leading. Coming down, the valley seemed to stretch on endlessly. Suddenly, Frodo saw a hopeful sign. Whoops. On either side, ahead, a darkness began to loom through the mist. And he guessed they were at last approaching the gap in the hills, the north gate of the Barrow Downs. If they could just pass that, they would be free. Come on, follow me, he called back over his shoulder. And he hurried forward, but his hope soon changed to bewilderment and alarm. The dark patches grew darker, but they shrank, and suddenly he saw a towering, ominous before him and leaning slightly toward one another like the pillars of a headless door, two huge standing stones. Now we have more!
I don't like what's going on here. I'm getting creeped out.
And actually, not to interrupt the flow of the talk, but I just looked it up and I am correct. In Lotro, the Dead Spire is where Frodo and the companion stopped. It says on September 28th, 3018, Frodo and his fellowship stopped at the place to rest for a minute, and that's where they were taken by the spell and stuff. So that is, and in Lotro there are three coffins, I guess, or
sepulchers.
Yeah.
And look at this, Brendan. Here's a artist's depiction of these two stones standing. If you're watching on our live video on Facebook, our Facebook page at facebook.com/secretfirepodcast.
Wow. Yeah. I just really don't like this.
I don't think you're supposed to.
No, you're not supposed to. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
At least I'm not wrong there. I'm not alone. Yeah. All right.
And of course, Frodo makes the mistake of hurrying ahead, and he separates himself from the group.
Shouldn't have done that, Frodo. Mm-hmm.
Sam, he called. Pip and Merry, come along. Why won't you keep up? Or why don't you keep up? There was no answer. Fear took him, and he ran back past the stone, shouting wildly, Sam, Sam, Merry, Pippin! The pony bolted into the mist and vanished. For some way off, or so it seemed, he thought he heard a cry. Oi, Frodo! Oi! It was away westward. Eastward. It was away eastward. And on his left, as he stood under the great stones, staring and straining into the gloom. He plunged off in the direction of the call and found himself going steeply uphill. So there's confusion. This mist is clouding everything
around him. What happens
beyond recognition?
During fear.
You get confused. and you start acting on impulse rather than sticking to a plan or a hope that you had before.
Oh, good point.
So,
good point. Let's talk a little bit about the Barrow Downs.
Yes.
Shall we?
Yes.
Okay, turning to page 46 of everybody of our to the complete guide to Middle Earth by Robert Foster.
Lord.
We'll start there. And the Barrow Downs, it says the Downs east of the Old Forest, right? We know that. On the Barrow Downs were the Great Barrows, from which the Downs took their name. Because of the Barrows, the Downs were revered by the Dunedain. Who are the Dunedain?
Bless you.
The Rangers of the North.
Oh.
Oh. So. During the wars with Angmar in Third Age 1409... the Dunedain of Cardolan took refuge here. Micah, do you have anything on that?
On Cardolan?
Yeah.
Well, continue on with your...
Okay. About 1636, so, you know, 120-something years later, the Barrows were inhabited by evil Barrow Whites from Angmar. Let me say this word and see if this is a happy word. Angmar.
No, it's not.
No. Okay. and the Barrow Downs became a place of great dread.
As they are now.
As we are experiencing.
Yes.
Okay. Tolkien Gateway. We go over there. The Barrow Downs were first inhabited by men related to the Edain. In the First Age, together with the hills of Evendim to the north. They fled east as Easterlings invaded Eriador and passed on to Beleriand. But after these had left or been killed in the War of Wrath, the Edain returned to their old homes. During the Second Age, let's skip down here. After the split of Arnor in Third Age 861, the Barrow Downs became the capital of what is it? Cardolan.
Cardolan, yes.
Okay. In 1409, the Dunedain and the of Cardolan entrenched themselves here, but eventually the realm fell. So then we get to that around Third Age, 1636. The Witch King sent the Barrow Whites that haunted the hills, preventing any resettlement. Okay, the Witch King. The Witch King of Angmar. Who's the Witch King?
The Chief of the Nazgul.
Yes.
Or as the Witch King Hobbits would say, Black Riders.
Of Angmar.
Of Angmar.
Okay. Yes.
Now, I keep wanting to say the Witch King of Endor.
Don't say that.
That's not right.
No, that's okay, that. Angmar. That is, that, like, that's where Ewoks live.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly, okay. Yeah.
The Witch King of the Ewoks.
Yes.
Well, then we need to talk a little bit about Barrow Whites. So the Witch King of Angmar, the Chief of the Nazgul, sent those things. So the Barrow Whites, well, what page is that on? That's also on page 46 of The Complete Guide to Middle Earth. Evil spirits from Angmar who infested the Great Barrows after Third Age 1636. The Whites tried to entrap people in the Barrows and then sacrifice them. Ugh. So the Barrow Whites were evil spirits, although their true nature is unknown. It's not known if they were perverted Maiar, again with the Maiar.
Hmm.
Or spirits of orcs, fallen Avari, or evil men. The Witch King of Angmar sent them to the Barrow Downs in order to prevent a resurrection of the destroyed Dunedain Kingdom of Cardolan. The spirit stirred the dead bones in the mounds and haunted them. Whose bones are they?
Men of Cardolan.
Who are the men of Cardolan?
Well, you covered it. It's originally it was the Kingdom of Arnor, and then at some point
Arnor's the northern kingdom.
Well,
and Gondor was the southern kingdom.
Yes.
Okay.
But Arnor was the main, like, yes. It held the king, and then Gondor had a steward, and still does.
So
during,
when we get to the appendices, Brendan, and you learn about the Numenoreans, then this will make sense.
But pretty much,
good.
At a time, I don't have the date right in front of me, but the kingdom split into three different factions. One was Arthedain. I've never been able to pronounce that one, but Arthedain, like Rudar, and Cardolan. Arthedain and Cardolan were like pretty much at well. All, at first, all of them were fairly good men, but
okay.
Then Rudar made a pact with Angmar, and so they were the evil ones now. And Arthedain and Cardolan were kind of allied with each other, and then Cardolan it fell to Angmar, and that's when the Witch King then sent in the Barrow Whites to inhabit the bones as like a last like insult to.
Okay, I see here that so yes, around 1272, orcs began to trouble the region. Around Third Age 1300, the Witch King founded the Kingdom of Angmar north of the Ettenmoors. This event caused many hobbits to move to Bree. Whoa!
Okay, wait.
Wow, now we're going deep, digging into the hobbit history as well.
Wow.
So they are tied to this.
The hobbits were actually in service to the king of Arnor because he allowed them to inhabit the Shire, which was originally his hunting ground.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yep. Okay, so are you understanding what's going on here? This is a
not,
boy
on... Not all the lore stuff, but...
The Witch King is wanting to put an end to the Dunedain. So he sends... They're part of the men of Cardolan.
Mm-hmm.
And they... So the Witch King sends these evil spirits, whatever they are, to the Barrow Downs in order to inhabit the bones of these dead kings in order to haunt and sacrifice. And a bunch of ugly stuff took place here. That's why we're getting the creeps. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's continue.
Oh, man. Okay.
Oh, he's reticent.
Yeah, yeah. Here, I'm trying to find a good place
where
to
where are
up.
You? He cried out miserably.
Where are you at? Okay, at the break, yeah. There was no reply. He stood listening. He was suddenly aware that it was getting very cold, and that up here, a wind was beginning to blow, an icy wind. A change was coming in the weather. The mist was flowing past him now in shreds and tatters. His breath was smoking, and the darkness was less near and thick. He looked up and saw with surprise that faint stars were appearing overhead amid strands of hurrying cloud and fog. The wind began to hiss over the grass. So wait, how are stars shining through the fog?
Well, it's fog.
But still, if the fog's that thick...
Because it's coming by in shreds and tatters.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right, he imagined gotcha. Suddenly that he caught a muffled cry, and he made towards it. And even as he went forward, the mist was rolled up and thrust aside, and the starry sky was unveiled. A glance showed him that he was now facing southward and was on a round hilltop, which he must have climbed from the north. Out of the east, the biting wind was blowing. To his right, there loomed against the westward stars a black shape. A great barrow stood there.
Where are you? He cried again, both angry and afraid. Here, said a voice, deep and cold, and it seemed to come out of the ground. I am waiting for you.
No, said Frodo. But he did not run away. His knees gave, and he fell upon the ground. Nothing happened, and there was no sound. Trembling, he looked up in time to see a tall, dark figure like a shadow against the stars. Are you freaked out?
Yes! And not just because of that, because of the Lotro sounds, too.
That's why we do this!
Oh, man!
Listeners, you should be listening in your earbuds or your Beats or whatever you call them.
What?
Beats.
That's...
The headphones, you know?
No, I know. I don't think he knows.
Hey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, true.
What do you call beats?
It leaned over him, and he thought there were two eyes, very cold, though lit with a pale light, that seemed to come from some remote distance. Then a grip stronger and colder than iron seized him. The icy touch froze his bones, and he remembered no more. This is the part when I was reading Lord of the Rings to the kids the first time, I would say, and Frodo laid down and died. I kept doing that.
And he was never heard from again.
Yes.
Good night.
Brendan, carry on.
When he came to himself again, for a moment he could recall nothing except a sense of dread. Then suddenly he knew that he was imprisoned, caught hopelessly. He was in a barrow. A barrow white had taken him, and he was probably already under the dreadful spells of the barrow whites, about which whispered tales spoke. He dared not move, but lay, as he found himself, flat on his back upon a cold stone, with his hands on his breast.
Look at this depiction here of a barrow white.
Stop! Yeah, oh, I saw that.
Was it the spirit-looking thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
very creepy.
It was like a banshee or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Though his fear was so great that it seemed to be part of the very darkness that was round him, he found himself, as he lay, thinking about Bilbo Baggins and his stories of their jogging along together in the lanes of the Shire and talking about roads and adventures. And I highlighted this. I'm sure you did too. There is a seed of courage hidden, often deeply, it is true, in the heart of the fattest and most timid hobbit, waiting for some final, desperate danger to make it grow. Frodo was neither very fat nor very timid. Indeed, though he did not know it, Bilbo and Gandalf had thought him the best hobbit in the Shire. He thought he had come to the end of his adventure, and a terrible end. But the thought hardened him. He found himself stiffening, as if for a final spring. He no longer felt limp, like a helpless prey.
Wow. That's a change.
And if anything, again, that just deepens our, as the audience's, perception of how much Frodo admires and loves and respects Bilbo.
Yes.
And it just keeps coming up.
And vice versa.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Micah, are we inside of a barrow right now?
Yeah. I wasn't getting many sounds in there, though, so.
I don't know, the crawling hands. And, oh, wait, what's that? Did I just spoil? Spoiler alert! Okay, come on.
But that comes up later. That's not a spoiler. Anyway, okay.
Oh, you did? Oh. You read this chapter already. Okay, you know what to expect.
Yeah. Come on, guy. As he lay there, thinking and getting a hold of himself, he noticed all at once that the darkness was slowly giving way. A pale greenish light was growing around him. It did not at first show him what kind of place he was in, for the light seemed to be coming out of himself and from the floor beside him, and had not yet reached the roof or wall. He turned, and there in the cold glow, as he saw lying beside him, Sam, Pippin, and Merry. They were on their backs, and their faces looked deathly pale, and they were clad in white. About them lay many treasures of gold, maybe, though in that light they looked cold and unlovely. On their hands were circlets, gold chains were about their waists, and on their fingers were many rings. Swords lay by their sides, and shields were at their feet, but across their three necks lay one long naked sword.
Ugh, that's a creepy visual.
Okay, so, but what's going on? So is he like seeing, is this a vision?
They are laid out.
Okay, they are laid out as if dead.
About to be sacrificed.
The long sword. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Creepy.
Yeah.
And there's no sounds.
No, there are. See, I'll step back outside.
Okay.
I was in a barrow, but.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Suddenly.
Boy, your timing is impeccable.
A song began, a cold murmur rising and falling. The voice seemed far away and immeasurably dreary, sometimes high in the air and thin, sometimes like a low moan from the ground. Out of the formless stream of sad but horrible sounds, strings of words would now and again shape themselves, grim, hard, cold words, heartless and miserable. The night was railing against the morning, of which it was bereaved. And the cold was cursing the warmth for which it hungered. Frodo was chilled to the marrow. And after a while, the song became clearer. And with its dread, and with dread in his heart, he perceived that it had changed into
an incantation.
This is an evil, evil place. Wow, what is this incantation?
Cold be hand and heart and bone, and cold be sleep under stone. Never more to wake on stony bed, never till the sun fails and the moon is dead. In the black wind the stars shall die, and still on gold here let them lie, till the dark Lord lifts his hand over dead sea and withered land. God, it's creepy.
Hey.
Okay. Okay, can we just skip down to the good part? Or is there
no,
anything?
I think that we should... I think we should draw this episode to an end.
No, you think so?
Yeah, there's
what are you
going
to talk about next time?
I don't know.
We need to talk about. Never mind.
Should we go on?
Let's. We'll need time to debrief. Plus, you got a Christian theme. You got to pull out in here somewhere.
No, I can't.
Because we haven't reached that part.
Yeah.
Hmm. He heard his head.
This is. Oh, what a terrible place to leave us for a week.
Yeah. Hey, he heard behind his head a creaking and scraping sound. Raising himself on one arm, he looked and saw now in the pale light that they were in a kind of passage, which behind them turned a corner. Round the corner, a long arm was groping, walking on its fingers towards Sam, who was lying nearest, and towards the hilt of the sword that lay upon him.
The end.
So it's just like this.
Farewell, Sam.
Is this just an arm just walking on its fingers?
Yes,
like dismembered from a body.
It's bereft of body.
Oh man, that is so weird. At first, Frodo felt as if he had indeed been turned into stone by the incantation. Then a wild thought of escape came to him. He wondered if he put on the ring, whether the Barrow-wight would miss him, and he might find some way out. He thought of himself running free over the grass, grieving for Mary and Sam and Pippin, but free and alive himself. And Gandalf would admit there had been nothing else he could do.
You need say no more. We'd best get a move on. There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No, don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond.
I can't think of a worse place to be, or a more terrifying place to end this episode.
Yeah.
This discussion. What a ominous, oppressive, horrible predicament we're in.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if I'll get any better.
Just so soon after leaving Tom Bombadil's house.
Oh, goodness. And actually, this makes a good place to stop, isn't it?
It is.
Okay.
I figured it would.
And so as we wrap up this episode, friends, this will be part one of Fog on the Barrow Downs. So stay tuned next week, Lord willing, for part two. We'll continue this chapter, see what happens. We all know what happens, but we're going to experience it together. And what is it? It's darkest before morning, mm-hmm. is the old saying, right?
Well, as Batman would say, it's darkest before the dawn.
No.
The night is darkest before the dawn.
He would say, Alfred.
Alfred. Alfred.
The night is darkest before the dawn.
Sam.
Come, Sam.
Frodo. Where are you?
Get
off me, you barrow. White.
The Dark Knight meets the Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight meets the
Barrow-wight. Hey!
Yeah, there you go.
Cross-platform. Okay, now we're done.
Okay.
Now we're done. All right, we're back. Hello.
So we will save the rest of the conversation for next week. But in the meantime, listeners, which part about this chapter so far has stood out to you particularly? What do you like about... I mean, Tolkien, is he not a wordsmith?
Yes.
Wow. So let us know. We'll give you all the ways to contact us here in just a few moments. But first, let's take a trip to the party tree. Micah, you have been working for months now on this production of...
How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Okay.
What a title.
And you're playing the part of Bud Frump, and last night was opening night at the Mac here in Manchester, yes. Tennessee. So how's it going?
It was, as far as opening nights go, it was pretty good.
Now, I know traditionally you don't enjoy opening nights.
Well, I don't think any actor does.
Oh, is that true? Okay. Because nothing a couple more weeks couldn't...
I call the practice before opening night a soft performance, and I call the actual first performance a hard rehearsal.
Oh! And do you have another show tonight?
Yes, and... fingers crossed it'll be better. The main problem we've had is the day before opening night, our lead lady had no voice.
Oh, no.
And...
Madam Librarian?
No.
Oh.
It's another woman you've never seen before, but you'll enjoy it.
Okay.
You'll enjoy her. But, so, the other day, you know, she had it someone back, but she couldn't really sing. So she had to kind of sing-speak it. And it was pretty unfortunate, gotcha. But because she's a really, really good singer. But
well,
here's hoping by
tonight.
Tonight, but that's a bit ambitious. But
lots of what is that stuff? Listerment or whatever spray on your.
Yeah, Listerment. She's been drinking all kinds of teas and stuff.
It's an old timey thing, Brendan.
My main thing is, why is she not on apple cider vinegar and honey?
She might be.
She might be. That's the old.
Can you really get on? Apple cider,
yes,
vinegar, and honey?
Yes, you can.
Is it dense enough?
Yeah. Yes, it will support any weight you throw on it. Let me tell you, that stuff is strong. Shoot it back.
And then, next weekend as well. So we'll get another report from Micah, a theater report from Micah here on the Secret Fire podcast. Brendan, anything going on with you that you want to talk about?
No. Okay. I mean, just school. This semester of school is winding up. We're finishing the class, I'm finishing a class called Research and Aesthetics in Theater.
What's that like? Give us just a thumbnail sketch.
My experience with it has been learning by looking at other people, other practitioners' examples of incorporating a Christian worldview. Even if the play isn't necessarily Christian per se, but a Christian worldview into their work and how directors incorporate that, even though they didn't create it with the text, how they can still incorporate a Christian worldview into their craft.
It sounds like the reverse of what we do on Finding Christ in Cinema.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, pretty much.
Well, there you go.
Which, oddly enough, FCC would have loved this, but I'll go ahead and tell you here. So for our last couple, this past week and this upcoming week is our last week. And we're reading an article, I kid you not, called Redemption in the Movies. By Brian Godawa.
Oh, wow.
And I feel like...
Well, he's a screenwriter.
Yes. And I feel like... I feel like I'm already like five steps ahead of the class just because,
yes.
Because of FCC,
right.
Because of listening to Brian himself, with the Theonauts, with a few other podcasts that I've stumbled across, that he's been a guest of. And he speaks about, using your Christian worldview as a part of your art. Not necessarily to make a quote.
That's what Tolkien did.
Not necessarily to make a Christian play.
Right.
Or a Christian story.
Or a Christian Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. But to tell a good story and then let that be reflective.
Yes.
Of your own understanding. And
that's
your
what Peter Kraft talks
relationship
about.
With God.
Yep.
So
Christianity and the Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
Wow. Awesome.
I mean, but then again, I always have to bring up what my directing teacher said last summer whilst in Virginia. What makes a Christian play? Well, what makes a Christian lasagna? Same thing.
Love it. Next week, we will be, we'll complete Fog on the Barrow Downs. It'll be a part two of our discussion. See what happens. See if we can turn that frown upside down. Frodo, don't be sad, Frodo. We want you to join us. But before we go out, all the party invitations. Here we go. Secret Fire Podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time in the GCT Network studio. You can join us for live video on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Secret Fire Podcast.
And you can join us on the Arkansone server in Lord of the Rings Online at lotro.com.
To find out more about the Secret Fire Podcast, as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema and The Theonauts, visit our main website at gctnetwork.com.
You can send us an email at secretfire@gctnetwork.com. You can call up Fatty Bulger on the Hobbit Hotline at 507-407-GCTN, or use the emergency backup Hobbit Hotline at 507-407-4286.
One does not simply walk into Mordor.
And one does not simply follow us on Twitter. It does take some gumption to do so, and you can do it at twitter.com/secretfirecast, or just tweet at us at secretfirecast. Now, what if you just want to listen to the good old podcast?
I do.
You can go to iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatcher and search them all for the Secret Fire Podcast.
Yes, our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-Earth by Brobdignagian Bards. Find out more about them and buy CDs and all digital music, all that good stuff at their website, thebards.net. I don't know.
What did you say?
Until next time.
I regret to announce this is the end. I'm going now. Bid you all a very fond farewell.
Goodbye!
Bye. Goodbye! It was tied to a barrel wine!
See, now, with my new relaxed posture on the show, I stumble over my words.
That's what it is. That ball kept you on your toes.
Maybe you need one of these seats made of steel.
Ah! Yeah, you can take that. The old coot.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
Is your Great Commission transmission
at gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission.